Hello and welcome to the Feeder Series podcast. I'm your host, Jim Kimberley, and today we have two returning guests to shine a Feeder Series spotlight on, and two drivers that are sharing the same team for the 2024 season. Not only that, one is an F3 vice champion, with the other the F3 champion from 1 year earlier, and they'll undoubtedly be race-winning drivers in F2 2024, at the very least. Our drivers in focus today are, of course, Victor Martin and Zach O'Sullivan. And you can head back to episode 32 to hear from Victor just before he took the F3 title. Great listen with his other teammates. And then Zach is continuing what has somehow become a tradition of speaking to the Feed Series podcast early on in the season. You can head back to episodes 13 and 52 for more chat with Zach. But before you do, welcome back to the show, both of you. How are things going? I know, Zach, at the moment you are at a golf course as we speak, just before pre-season testing starts. How's that for you? Sorry to interrupt the round.
No, all good. I was saying earlier, yeah, we had a short media day, so I made the most of it and got to the golf course in the afternoon. But no, it was nice. Nice relaxing winter to switch off a bit. But yeah, ready to go again in Bahrain.
And Victor, when did you arrive in Bahrain? I know Zach got in quite late or quite early, depending on how you look at it.
Quite the same. Also, I arrived around 3 a.m. Last night, so quite early in the morning, actually. I will say quite busy also in the winter. I tried to for sure rest a bit from the last season because it was quite intense. But I tried also to keep myself active, you know, doing some work with my brothers and some things about racing, karting, and the team we have. But of course, it's always good to also rest, get back the shape physically also before the season. I went on a few training camps with the academy, myself, and with my physio. So we are very ready for it. And I just actually finished the paddle session also, so that was a perfect timing.
Zach, before we started recording, do you remember what I said about paddle?
Yeah, you said every racing driver is playing paddle.
Victor, could you let me know what's going on? Why is everybody all of a sudden doing paddle? It seems to be the only sport that everyone seems to do in their spare time in the motorsport.
I don't know. You share a moment with drivers, with people you like from the track, with your engineer, with mechanics. You know, it's I think kind of the sport where you can have not as much people as possible on the same, I would say, game. Mm-hmm. But for sure, it's also the moment where you can spend time with your team also a bit, because most of the drivers are not coming from the team country, so you kind of need to travel. You don't have the time sometimes, and I would say that we all arrive one day earlier on a racetrack, so we have some time to train, to rest, so we kind of plan a game all together. I was actually playing, and there was Oli Bierman and Crawford who was playing on the paddle. How you say
court, I guess, tennis court.
Yeah, paddle course next to us. So.
And Zach, meanwhile, goes to the golf course for a very different sort of relaxation. Yes. No, don't fancy paddle?
Much more relaxing golf.
Yeah.
JM Correa actually was playing golf as well. I saw him on a golf cart driving around. So I think golf and paddle are the motorsport kind of equivalents. I don't know, I've got a normal sport.
And how was your round? Am I interrupting the middle of it, or have you finished now?
No, I just finished. We did 9 holes. It was good. I ended up losing by 1 in the end. So I'm really pissed off and angry, annoyed.
That's a good way to start the season. Victor, did you get off to a winning start with your paddle? Or
I won.
Oh, I mean, already the dominance is going one way in the ART team. Well, congratulations. Now, I want to stick with you for a second, Victor, because you both are ART this year, of course, and you've obviously done very well there for you. How do you think the team has progressed the last little while, and How do you think Zach's going to find it coming into the new team this year?
For sure, I think we made a big step. I think they also made a big step from the team perspective. I think the year we saw and we all have seen last year was really strong from both Theo and myself, but also the team. Every time we're going on the track, actually, I was fully confident that the car was going to be super fast and I was going to be able to show my full potential, to go for pole position, to fight for wins. And yeah, this confidence is really, really important. I will say I didn't know the F2 team before last year, so I don't know how much progress they have made from one season to another. But for sure, throughout the season, we have been really strong also with Theo in our relationship, how to work together, what is the step to do between tracks, between seconds, and yeah, actually also our preference as drivers, from Theo to myself, you know, there can be some difference also. So I think the team understood it quite well also. And no, going into this year, I know ART will be super strong. I know it is the right team to be with. Zach did the right choice. I hope at least it will be a strong season again. And for sure, he will adapt quickly to the team. I think we already did three days together. The relationship is good. I think he has seen he's quick. Also, I like because he's quick on the first few push. So at least we can have some good feedback, some good feeling. And again, I would say it's. I'm welcoming him to have a success together, and after it will be his job to do a good year.
Yeah, I'm sure you both will actually, and yeah, it's kind of going into Victor's team in some ways, Zach, but equally you've got this experience going Kramer, Carl, and ART. You're really hitting the big hitters in the feeder series world. Are you finding that's been different approaches from all these different teams that is benefiting you?
There's always slight differences. I think there are always positive differences. Obviously, every team in some ways represents their nationality as well. So jumping from a British and Italian team is a very big difference. I would say going to a French team now is a bit more similar to a British team in the way they operate, some of the mannerisms. The transition has been quite fluid, I think. There's been no real sticking points. Of course, we're yet to see how it all translates on track, but so far, so good.
Excellent. I'm really, really curious. Obviously, speaking before the preseason even starts at this point, we've not even had the testing as we chat. So we could have both of you as race-winning drivers and a stunning start to the season by the time this podcast goes out. I'm excited to see just the entire F2 grid. It's a really, really stacked championship. What a year to make the step up, Zach. It's looking really, really strong. But I mean, I could chat to you guys all day, and I know both of you are very busy, especially with just landing in the last 24 hours. So I'll say that's enough idle chit chat. And as long-time viewers and listeners know, the Feeder Series podcast isn't for me; it's for our audience. So we're going to turn to the audience questions. But just before we get there, we've had plenty of amazing guests on the show, such as Victor and Zach, and we've got many more lined up. If you like what we do, make sure you subscribe on YouTube or your podcast player, drop us a like and leave your thoughts on the show, and let us know any other guests you'd like to see in the comments. And for those of you already following us, thank you so much. We've had over 250,000 listeners and views across YouTube and normal Spotify and whatnot. We genuinely appreciate all of your support. Right, so I've kind of grouped some of these questions together, and I'm afraid, Zach, I'm going to have to start with you, because we've had Mercedes63 on Twitter, So Weirdo F1, and Josher on Discord asking similar questions. First up from Mercedes, Zach, have you considered getting a buzz cut to become more aerodynamic? Easy for me to say. You currently have a lot of hair. So Weirdo F1, when's a haircut, Zach? And Josher, to Zach, when will you get a haircut? Your hair seems to be a big topic of conversation.
Massive. I actually had a haircut 2 days ago, prior to the media days of opportunity. So it is somewhat shorter. But I agree, at some point in the winter, it's very long. And in regards to the buzz cuts, it's great in theory, but I think with a helmet on, it doesn't make great of a difference.
You say that, but did you see how Mr. Jack Doohan did after he's getting his short hair? He did okay.
It's true, but he goes back and forth, buzz cut, long hair, buzz cut.
Okay, well, buzz cut maybe one day. Victor, did you get a nice little haircut before the media day?
I actually couldn't. No, I had no time to do it. But it's going pretty good, I would say. I want to go, but it's not the it's not a nightmare, you know. Like I'm getting some dig, but it's okay.
Okay, well, I'm I'm hopeful when I see the actual graphics on the show starting, the F2 show starting. You're not looking too crazy with your hair, Victor, but no, you're looking very presentable at the moment, both of you. And the next three were kind of grouped together. I put were. I guess the Anglo-French rivalry, friendship, and like you say, Zach, probably a lot more similarities than both of our nations care to admit, because we are very similar. And I've got this one from Vicky Vilecki, I think it is. Zach, what is the most French thing you've learned from Victor so far? And then on the other side, Victor, what is the most British thing that you've learned from Zach so far? Zach, do you want to take us away?
From Victor, it's hard to say what I've learned. I have picked up French snacks far better than English snacks.
Any examples?
These brioches called pesquier, fennelé. And I drive back and forth to the workshop, and I always pick them up in a service station on the way. But yeah, I'm slowly learning French mannerisms. Actually, the sense of humour is quite similar in English mm-hmm. French, more so than we like to admit.
Mm-hmm. What was it? I didn't understand. When you go back,
you stop. I get a collect pan au lait.
Pan au lait.
Pan au lait. Yeah, I really like them so. I have like four in my car every time I go back.
Picture of health, Zach.
On my side, I don't know. Like, because honestly, every time I saw Zach was in France. So nothing about the country. And we didn't actually spend so much time together except the 3 days of testing. I have nothing in mind for now.
Okay. No cups of tea or fish and chips or any of the usual?
No, not yet. Correct. Probably there will be, but not yet.
Zach, you're going to have to invite Victor over and make sure you take him for a Sunday roast or something.
No, he's next in the coffee. We did an activity together at the workshop with the engineers. No, it was just trying to survive because we were all French and in the moment we were like... mood, and I think we lost a bit of Zach because we're trying to sort out something in French and he was trying to understand that. That's quite funny.
Well, there is a question here from a brilliant username, by the way, I Lot of Hope, like as in a lot of hope. Has Zach ever felt left out for not being French? I know it's early days, Zach, but yes. Is the language barrier maybe a problem?
No, I don't think so. I think the escape room Victor is talking about, I can understand because we're about to lose and then you go into French. But no, I mean, ALT, they don't always have French drivers. Obviously, last year, Victor and Theo were both French speaking, but in the past, they've had English speaking drivers. Of course, everyone is fluent in English and we do all our debriefs for encouraged to speak in English. So I never really feel left out. Being an Italian team last year as well. I'm used to working with a different language at heart. But yeah, also it's my duty as well to embrace the culture, to learn as much French as I can. Because I can't just be sat there refusing to speak French or refusing to understand.
And then the other one from Formula Vips. Zach, has Victor taught you any French?
No, but honestly, it's true. Like we didn't spend... enough time like outside
Two days in the sim and 3 days in Abu Dhabi.
So. Yeah, outside the prep with the team and the testing, honestly, it has been, I think, quite busy on both sides with training camps, with Alpine, for Zach, with Williams. I mean, we're a bit on our side. So, no, we'll have time, I think, for sure to discuss about that.
If there's anything like I know about junior racing drivers. That foreign language exchange is all about swear words. So I'm sure, Zach, you'll be learning some of the words you shouldn't soon enough.
That's but, the problem.
Yeah, isn't it? But Victor, you actually make a very good segue, because F1 Kimi wanted to know, both of them are part of young driver programs of different F1 teams, and recently have been doing training camps with them, as you said, Victor. I was wondering if they see or feel a difference in how prepared they are for the upcoming season, well, this upcoming season compared to other ones, since being supported by F1 teams compared to how it was before. Now, both of you had affiliations for quite a while, but it's maybe difficult for you to remember, but Zach, when you're going for that GB4, GB3 seasons compared to now, how does that change?
I think it's very useful. I think less so at the lower level. I think I felt always prepared going into seasons prior to being the winners. I think at a higher level, there's a lot more, when you're closer to Formula 1, there's a lot more relevant data to compare to F1, whether it be fitness, whether it be sim stuff. So it is very useful. You do feel prepared. Of course, my main priority, as with Victor, is having a good Formula 2 season. You can then use your academy's framework to aid that season in areas that perhaps the F2 team can't fulfill. But the main focus every year is to complete your season as well as you can with your Formula 2 or Formula 3 team, and use the academy around that to fill in any gaps that perhaps you might need.
Victor, on your side, you say you've been doing a training camp. Where was it you went? Did you go
to Tenerife?
Tenerife, that's what it was, Tenerife. Yeah. How was it? And how was this from before you went to Alpine, which you've been there for, 4 years, 3 years?
I have been, actually, it's the fourth year I'm going in Tenerife. So it was I'm getting used to it. It's like a second home for the winter, I would say. But no, I remember when I was a bit younger. But actually, I was with Renault Sport Academy before. So since 2018, it's kind of always the winter time is dedicated to training camps, to the full preparation, physically, mentally, technically, with the team. They give us some time to go also to Enstone, to the factory, to the simulator. I do even more now, because now I'm in F2, so it's kind of closer to F1, so they use you more. But I would say, it's really important. I like this part of the season because it's the moment where you just dedicate the full preparation for the season. You are like fully focused for it. You think about your goals and nothing else. There is like no rest time. You did it before in December, and it's like in January. It's a full send to be fully prepared for the season. And Alpine has always given me the full package to be fully ready for the first round.
I'm going to do the thing which I hate that I do, which is ask more questions based off the audience questions. But both of you, I would say now, are almost the de facto lead, as in longest serving member in the support series of each academy. Are you feeling almost a leadership role, Victor? Like, are you thinking these younger drivers coming in that you need to show them how it works?
What do you mean? You mean like I'm the oldest of the or the longest?
The longest serving one. You've been there a while. You've got new drivers coming in.
It's quite weird to think like that, because I still remember when I was entering the academy and there was Antoine Hubert, there was Jacket Ken at that time. There were many of them, like Lundgaard also was already in F2 when I was still in Formula Renault. I was thinking and I was hoping I was going to get that place, I would say, to be the kind of first one on the list of the academy, based on the category I am in. I'm not, I don't want to people to get wrong from what I'm saying, but for sure it's a good feeling, you know, when you are in F2, there is Kush also, who joined the academy, so we'll be two in F2. But it's quite nice. You give advice, you give experience to the young ones, and it will remind you what you went through when you were at that time were there.
Same follow-up for you, I guess, as well, then, Zach, because the Williams Academy has gone from when you were there. I say this very gingerly because you were also a part of it, but it wasn't necessarily full of the same talent it's full of now, in which case you've got about, I think, 8 drivers when I counted, all in some, in different categories, all like karting, Indy Next, F3, like Frecker now with Giusti. Are you thinking, like, you are now the lead driver in some ways, aside from Jamie?
I don't know. I mean, Franco's also an F2, so I think
But Franco's relatively recent, is my point.
Yeah, I think so. But I mean, we both share duties. He does a good job. I guess in a sense, yes. But yes, because I just focus on my job and performing as well as I can to impress them and meet the expectations they set, because that's my main priority. I think everyone in motorsport is relatively interested. So for me, my goal is to do as best as I can in Formula 2 and focus on what I can control and what I can do to understand, essentially.
Very, very good PR they've got at Williams, Zach, I have to say, with answers like that. That's good. A question, which I'm also going to add something to you after, Zach, but this one's for Victor, too, actually, for Victor. Oscar Alpha 88 on, I say Twitter, X, sorry, X. I'm very, very, still can't say it. Hello, Victor. What's your opinion on Hamilton going to Ferrari, and could it have a positive impact on your hopes of moving up to Alpine? And Sobocci also says, Victor, do you expect to be in contention for an Alpine seat in 2025? The two kind of connect because of the driver market shakeup this has created.
It's still hard to say things about that, because in the end, I still have a long season ahead, which we didn't start yet. It's still only testing in a few days. So I will say it will be based on my Formula 2 season. Of course, if I do what I need to do, which is winning races, being in the title fight until the end of the season, for sure I hope I will get a chance to enter F1. And I want to do it with Alpine, because they have helped me since 2018 now. So quite a long time ago, they have always supported my project in motorsports, and always followed me at the best in the best way possible. And in the end, for Hamilton, I don't know. I would say personally, I like it, because he goes to a different team, new challenge for him. It's kind of putting challenges for the championship. You see one of the greatest of all time in a red car, in a different car that he has been since a long time. So I would say personally I like it, because I always like Lewis, but that's a personal opinion. And then if it will open the market, for sure.
I can see, Victor, your inner fan coming out when you're talking about it. Like, you've got the business side for can I get a drive, but you've also got it's exciting, and Formula One's exciting.
Yeah, for sure. I because I have been always following Hamilton, and yeah, it's kind of my favorite driver that I follow with Leclerc, with Gasly, and these three. But I will say, yeah, seeing him going to a different team is quite nice, and you can see that he has a new challenge, and I think for the sport it will be a good show also. So,
yeah, I'm looking forward to
as
it.
As I said, that's my personal, like, a little fan of Hamilton saying that. But on my side, I know that if I want a chance, it will be based on performances and results that I will do this year, for sure.
I completely understand. And my sort of tied question to it for you, Zach, is it's created a bit of uncertainty with Albon being lined up for his recent year, last year, making him quite attractive, which may open up a seat or two seats at Williams. So are you seeing that as a potential, or are you going to go down the PR route of need to see how it goes?
Yeah, I think it's true. You have to see how it goes. At the end of the day, you're not going to make it to Formula 1 without an impressive F2 season. So that's a priority. I think any shakeup in the driver market is a good shakeup, especially for young drivers. None of us really want a stagnant kind of driver market. So it's cool, as Victor said, it's good for F1 as well. Any shakeup in big teams, especially, is always a good story, and it's great for the sport. what it means for us, I'm not too sure. I'll be able to tell you a bit better in 10 months or so. But for now, my focus is, as Victor said, is prior to pre-season, testing. So my focus is F2. I'm doing everything I can control and everything I can do well.
Well, I don't know what... you obviously can't control that, so I don't know how that's going to work. But I know what you could control, and this is from LukeStone92, who wanted to say, Zach, how did you end up getting on your A-levels? They spoke to you at Donington Park just after you passed your driving test, and you said you were finding the physics A-level particularly challenging. Anything you can share with us?
How did I fare? Well, it was a bit tricky because I had Monaco and Barcelona across my exams last year. So in the end, I didn't do the exams, but I got a written approval that I'd done my mocks in predictives. So I've got an A, a B, and a B. You can guess that physics is a B. but no, it went okay. It was a tough year, I think, for everyone. I think everyone's grades dropped a bit from their predictives. So I'm quite happy I didn't actually have to do the exams in the end. But yeah, I've always wanted to try and push my education first through racing as much as I could. Some sort of backbone to it. And also, I mean, physics wise, I think it's very important for racing, getting a good understanding of the mechanical platform of the car and just general the baseline understanding of it all was quite important to me. Going to A level, the level of it was a bit tricky, but I still enjoyed it. It was an extra challenge.
Well, you maybe will help with your adaptation to the new car. Shades King has asked, have you guys noticed any fundamental differences with the new Dallara chassis? I'm going to ask you this first, Victor, because you've got more familiarity with the old F2 car. Seems weird to call it old when you haven't raced it at this point, but how have you found, I know you've not spent a lot of time, but how have you found adjusting to the new car with the shakedown and the limited time you have had so far?
Honestly, it wasn't a big change. I think everyone has been able to feel this, and I think everyone will be able to say it also that it's pretty close to the old one. I think why? Because the tires are the same. So in the end, the contact patch with the track itself is the same. We have the same compound, the same tire, the same size of the tire, the same clutch, the same brakes. And like I would say 70% of the tools we kind of use, we have the same than the old one. So in the end, the chassis, I think Dallara wanted to do a new one, but I think in their mind was not to do a day and night, because in the end you make the team a hard life, and I would say we don't have the same also a budget as F1, so we cannot go as quick as them to develop, to understand a car with only 3 days of testing. So driving the car in Barcelona was pretty close. The feeling was good, and in the end, when we put the car on the track, we confirmed that it was not changing so much. Then there is a few things that you will need to adapt in terms of driving, but that's more, I will say, in the moment, what you feel and with the car balance. But in the end, no, there is no fundamental changes, but mainly because of the tires, honestly.
Fascinating. Honestly, I love hearing the technical insights. I would ask the physicist the aero, over here. But...
The aero, you just use it, I would say. It's quite simple as that. You just go faster in the corner, you adapt to it, you analyze the data, the numbers that you have, and you put the right one, what you think, the good compromise in there.
I am looking forward to seeing it in person, because I like Super Formula cars. They look amazing, and it looks quite similar to it with that aggressive rear wing. So I'm quite looking forward to seeing what it looks like. Yeah, I saw some controversy. Say again, Victor.
You get used to it. I think it's a bit like the Halo when we first saw it, we were like, not that nice. But in the end, when you just look at this every time and nothing else, you I don't know, your eyes get used to this shape, and in the end you familiarize with, yeah, with the wing.
Absolutely, I totally agree. I was going to ask you the same question, Zach, but I think this one's probably more pertinent and about driving different type of car. What was it like driving in the Abu Dhabi FP1 session? How did the Williams car compare to your previous BRDC Prize F1 test, which was the years before, was it Aston Martin 2021 or 2022 yeah. version?
I was 16 or 17, I don't know. It was 2022, yes. So, to compare is quite tricky, to be honest, because it's a different generation of cars.
Mm. How about the day then? Let's talk about your day going into it. That's going to be more...
Yeah, I mean, actually, at the end of the day, the first test I had in the Aston was the first test, and that was it, really. It blew me out of the water. It was a big shock. For anything I could have imagined, really. But that's F1, that sums up F1. But FP1, I felt a lot more prepared. I had done some running, obviously, before, so I knew what to expect. And I think being on an F1 weekend in FP1 with the 19 other cars on track, seeing all the F1 drivers drive around was really cool. And a moment for sure I won't forget. I think from my side, obviously, I'm very grateful to Williams for giving me that shot, because jumping from F3 to F1 is not an easy task, and they had the confidence that I'd be able to do it, and if it wasn't a risk for them. So yeah, I really, really enjoyed my time, the test as well afterwards.
Can I ask, do you feel more nervous knowing it's televised live rather than like the Aston Martin one, which is kind of done behind closed doors in a way? Like, is that something that you're aware of? Like, don't bin it because everyone's going to see.
Yes and no. I mean, as a driver stepping in for FP1, there's no pressure whatsoever. The team will normally give you a set of objectives to cover. In our case, we're running some slightly different configurations on the car they wanted to try. And having the rookie driver in the car gives you an opportunity to do that for free almost. So for me, it was just ticking off those boxes. Obviously, any racing driver pushes the limit, so I was pushing to what I thought was the right amount. But yeah, there's no pressure, and it was a really cool experience in which to drive an F1 car on the full weekend.
Tell you what, I would not want to be an FP1 for the first time and have to go as the first corner, a tunnel in Abu Dhabi with the longest car.
It was my first time at Abu Dhabi, full stop, actually, as well. So, but it was okay. It was fine.
Clearly, you did well. You did very well, mate. Victor, Leo Lorcher on Discord wants to know what the daily schedule looks like at the Tenerife camp for your Alpine Academy.
Oh, quite busy. Quite busy. I will say... I still have a bit in mind, 7:15 wake up, then going for breakfast around 7:45 with the whole team all together, then leaving something like 8:15, 8:30 to the sport complex. First strength and conditioning session from 8:30, 9 to 12, I would say. With a bit of rest, but we don't like push for 3 hours, but we get some rest. But I would say the morning was more for strength training. Then we come back, some lunch, and then in the afternoon, 2 more sessions. A bit more like the first one will be like a cardio session, so a track session or a swimming pool or something else for cardio. And then the last one will be more like an activity, like tennis, paddle or volleyball or something like collectively, just to not to actually enjoy training while training, but enjoy to not because in the end when you do 3 sessions a day you get tired, so you need to at some point have some fun because otherwise you kill yourself. But that's kind of the day, I would say. Then we come back, a bit of sun because Tenerife is good weather, so and then you shower and you go for dinner.
There's no sim, there's no karting, anything like that. Just all
not there, because we don't have the tools for it. We cannot bring anything there except the conditioning, like the cognitive training. We did almost every day some. With like a specific training for neck, for reaction time, for just the cognitive and the specific muscle that you use in the car. We were doing it every time, but with some exercise that we could, because we are in Tenerife, so we need to take the flight. You cannot bring, there is no simulator there. There is no, we are actually not allowed to go karting, except if it was a proper one to actually train. But there is no racetrack there. So I think there is one, but it's like for fun. It's not a.
I could imagine all of you guys turning up and just defeating the tourists by about 5 seconds a lap or something. That would be quite a sight.
Yeah, it's like the normal question they ask. Have you done any karting before? No. Never.
That's my first time. I'd love that. I've got, I guess it's like quite a deep question, which I'm going to just round off the podcast with. And I don't know who wants to go first, but it's from Alex on Discord, and they want to know, what's the best piece of advice that they've received in their life? Is there anything that strikes out to both of you? And please, whoever can think of something first, what is the best piece of advice that you have received? It's a very deep question.
I have one thing. Like, it's quite simple, honestly. It's to always accept things like they are coming to you. Because in the end, there is things that you cannot change, especially like in the moment when something happens, either if it's good or bad. Mostly when it's bad, because then you kind of improve it. If it's good, then it's good. But if it's bad, something bad, you just need to accept it, because otherwise you don't do a step forward. If you don't accept it, if you are not like at peace with it, then you cannot improve it. You cannot do a step forward. You cannot change the thing. You cannot. You don't go further. So I would say just accept things like they are coming. If you don't win, it means you are not prepared enough. It means you didn't do something well enough, and you should do something differently. So. I would say just simply accept things like they are coming.
I like that a lot, Victor. I remember we spoke before your F3 debut, not just before your F3 debut, and you were already mature at that point. But I can hear already that you're mentally more experienced. You've done so many more races and you've bounced back. So I'm guessing it's all from a few years of experience racing in the F1 support weekend. I love it. I love hearing that. Zach, I'm going to throw it to you and put you under the spotlight instead.
I also think I'd echo that statement, perhaps in slightly different words. I think, especially in the sport we're in, motorsport is so, to put it simply, random. You can never predict what's going to happen. There's so many variables involved. You can have a mechanical failure, you can be shaken out. You never know what's going to happen. And if you dwell on everything, it's going to a downward spiral of wondering, what could I have done better? What could I have done this? Whereas sometimes you go, look, it's happened. I can't change the results. Get on with it and do your thing again. I think as long as you trust your own process, the worst thing I think you can do is be reactive to failure sometimes and just go, actually, it's probably better if I do trust my own process. It's got me so far. There's no point in reinventing the wheel when it has worked in the past. And I think in motorsport especially, it's very easy to do that. So you can get caught in kind of ruts. You see it in F1 with certain drivers and certain teams, and they just get stuck in these ruts where actually when you start to think about stuff more, you lose the natural instincts. So I think it's along the similar lines as what Victor said. I think moving on from the stuff you can't control and just accepting sometimes things don't work, sometimes they do work. I'm going to go with it for a year. Because in every year you have bad days, you have good days. And you can't really do too much to change those.
I've always said it sounds something similar as well, that no matter how many rainy days there are, there's always sunny days at some point. So just have to weather those bad days. It sounds somewhat similar. So I like that. I like that. And the final thing, which is not a question, but it's just a request, I think, from Clara to both of you. And I don't know if it's to both of you, because Zach, I don't think you'll be guilty of this so far, but they've wanted a request to stop doing radio messages in French. I'm guessing they can't understand some of the messages, Victor. But does that mean anything to you? Because I've always heard you speak English on the radio.
What do you mean? I think I understood, but can you?
Yeah, they've requested to stop doing team radio in French, but I think you always do it in English.
They requested, but who requested?
Yeah, just a person on our Discord, just a fan of the sport. But I think it's because they don't understand what you're saying. But do you speak French on the radio? I thought it was always English.
No, I do. I do speak French. I do speak French unless I need to say something to FIA.
So that's the insider info. If it's French, it's for the team. If it's English, it's because you're trying to complain about another driver.
Or something. No, it not only driver, because you know sometimes there are things that are coming from anyone. But I will say no. I used to speak French because, but last year was quite easy. You know, we were all French. We were speaking French in the radio. But this year, as Zach said, I mean, I think I will still, if I'm able to speak French with my engineer, because I get quite it's not easier, but I will say it's more natural. Like when I want to for my engineer to understand something, I use the natural word from French, and he understands directly. And I used to in 2022 to change to English during the season, and I don't know. I felt I was natural, but it was not coming like. You know, like this. So I was sometimes saying something to my engineer, but I had to think a bit about it, and it wasn't anymore enough in the moment. So I would say I will try to keep it in French, and when it's with Zach, for sure we'll do it in English, because that's normal. And in the end, it's training me also. Even though I don't have any problem to speak English about motorsport, but I still get easier to speak French. But
what's really going to impress me is when Zach starts speaking French on the radio. That's your challenge for the year, Mr. O'Sullivan.
Just to annoy this Discord user, I'll do it.
That's perfect. You know how it works. I'm going to say thank you to both of you for joining. I know you guys have got a busy few days ahead of you. And by the time this podcast has gone out, we'll see how you guys are doing. But I'm guessing you're going to fare pretty well with ART and your raw talent for both of you. So best of luck for the season, both of you. I'm really excited to see how you go. So thank you also to everybody for watching and listening. If you are watching on YouTube, dropping a like on the video, leaving a comment and subscribing to the channel all really helps us out. And if you are listening, leaving a review on the podcast platform you're listening on is greatly appreciated. Finally, check out feederseries.net for more Feeder Series insight, and follow feeder_series and FS Americas on X, not Twitter, X, and Feeder Series Net on Instagram. You can find the links to all of those, plus where you find everyone else on this episode, including myself, in the YouTube description or the podcast show notes. Until next time, we've been the Feeder Series Podcast. Goodbye.